A little delayed, but here's Golf Smarter number 410, published on November 13, 2013. And it's brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Shave 5 strokes each round using the right putter with Kenny Giannini.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Kenny.
Hello, Fred. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. I'm very excited to learn more about your product line.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, too, talking to you.
Oh, thanks. So let's talk about the Kenny Giannini putters and how long they've been around. Let's get a little history of your putters, and then we'll get a history of you.
Well, I've been making putters since about 1988. Came up with the idea of mill putters for the golf industry. I produced the first production style mill putter on the market was for Ben Hogan, and I did that. And
was for Ben Hogan?
For the Ben Hogan Company, yes.
Oh, the Ben Hogan Company. Ben Hogan. Okay.
Yeah. I designed those putters. It was the first ones on the market.
And how did they get to you on that?
Well, I went to them. I was in Hawaii, and I was putting at that time with a TP Mills putter, which was not milled. You know, it was a forging and kind of hand ground and stuff like that. And I had playing with a guy, and he wanted to have that putter. And at that time, I got four putters a year from TP. And I can remember what I paid for them. I think it was $350 a piece is what I paid for them. Hmm. And the guy had to have this putter. And I kept telling him it wasn't for sale. And he said, everything's for sale. And I told him $1,500. And the guy took the putter.
Whoa.
And I sat around and thought to myself, you know, if I can figure out a way to do this, where we can retail these putters where the average person can buy one and afford it and machine them instead of doing this, I had this machining deal in my head that, you know, it could be very successful. And the next day I left Hawaii and came back and started on it. Wow. And I found a guy to machine my putters and proceeded to call the Ben Hogan Company because I knew a lot of people down there and I was on their staff. And they went with it. And I got a contract and started making them. That's how it all started.
There it goes. Explain to me what you mean by milled putters. I never took shop like that, so I don't.
Well, you take a billet, a piece of steel, and put it on a milling machine and carve the putter out of it. And the reason to do that is repeatability. You can make every putter the same. I mean, the greatest difference in our putters in any one of them is 10 thousandths, which is a third of a human hair. Hmm. So I can, you know, repeat what I'm making exactly the same every time. When you're dealing with forged putters and cast putters, you have a lot of hand grinding, and every putter is different. So that's why machining is a lot better.
And how do you create the first one? Do you do it on paper? What is it that gets you to a point when you're creating the head of a putter that you can finally
I've told people how I do this, and they kind of smile at me and laugh. But I don't know what it is, but I can visualize the putter in my head. And you know, I can get an idea for a design, and I can actually do it. I can see the putter being cut out and everything like that. And then I draw it on a piece of paper. When I'm at home and I'm watching television or something like that, I always have a pad of paper or something around. A lot of times I'll get an idea and I'll just draw it. You know, I'll draw it out and we'll go from there. You know, then I get an engineer to go ahead and make a blueprint of it. You know, I know the dimensions I want. You know, I'm not a machinist. I'm not an engineer.
Mm. And so then you were able to convey your thoughts out of your head onto paper, onto somebody else's machine. And then how many iterations will a putter go through before you finally go, this is what I've been thinking of in my head all along?
Well, this is what's kind of funny is very rarely do, you know, I've been doing it for so long that very, I mean, I can't think of a time, you know, I just designed two new putters last week and we ran some prototypes and the weights came out perfect just from what I drew on the paper. But I mean, I have an idea to get a weight, you know, how wide something has to be, how long, you know, different dimensions on the putter. But I can come pretty close. You know, very rarely do we have to do it more than twice. We might have to do it and then, you know, make a little adjustment, take a little off here to get the weight right. But never do we really change the design. The design's always been pretty good.
Wow, congratulations. That doesn't always work that way, does it?
No, it doesn't. I'm thankful that it does.
I bet you are. So what are the results? What is it that you're trying to accomplish when you're designing, and you're designing a putter head mostly, correct?
Correct.
And so what is it that you're trying to have that head do?
I'm trying to have it make more putts for the average golfer.
Okay, Fred, you know, ask an interesting question then.
You know, I'm trying to have it perform better than any other putter on the market. You know, the balance on it, the look of it. You know, I'm not a bling kind of guy. You know, I've always believed that less is more. You know, it's like, you know, I just like that. I don't want anything to take my attention away from what I'm trying to do with the putter down on the ground. So, you know, I don't put a lot of bling on my putters. There's not stampings and engravings all over the place to make it look like a billboard. You know, it's simple and it's just, you know, and the other thing is when you put my putters on the ground, they sit square. They never rock. The toe never opens or it doesn't close. You can set it down on anything and put it on the ground and it sits dead square. That's the most important thing for me when I'm designing a putter on the, you know, doing the bottom right to where that putter just sits. When you put it on the ground, you don't have to hang on to it. One finger, you can put it on the ground, and it's going to stay right where you put it.
Why is that unique among putting designs?
Well, because a lot of people don't design it right, or it's hand ground, and you get a little different grind in there. They'll put the high spot in there, and that putter will sit and it'll rock. They'll put it on the ground. I'm sure you've had it happen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can walk into PGA Superstore and walk around and pick up putter after putter and put it on the ground, have it open or close, it won't sit square. So then you have to manipulate it with your hands. You know, you're worrying more about keeping it square that way. I mean, my putters are designed to stay square, you know, right through the hitting area. You don't have to manipulate it at all. You just have to take it back, stroke it. Whether you have a straight back, straight through, or an inside to square to inside swing, putting stroke.
And what about from the top of the putter up to your hands? Do you have any things that you specifically want to happen, or are you pretty much wide open as far as, you know, the angle of the shaft, where the shaft is coming from on the head, whether it's a mallet or a blade, all those different elements
I design, you know, I design putters for different people. You know, I listen to everything that everybody says to me. And believe me, there's no way in the world that I think that I know everything. And I learn something every day. I learn it from amateurs. I learn it from 25 handicappers. When I listen, and then I try to take that and put it into putters. You know, I try to make it easier for them. You know, how the putter lines up, the side, you know, what kind of side lines I'll put on it, or if I put any side lines at all. You know, some people like more offset. Some people don't like a lot of offset. That's why I have 12 different putters right now, when the line's growing all the time.
What's your thought on anchored putters?
I don't care for them. I haven't made too many. I think to definitely, you know, I mean, the rules are the rules, you know, you can't do that, you know, and I think, you know, you get up and play, you know, I mean, that's just how it is.
How did you start design? What is your golf history that got you to the point where you're saying, yeah, putter design, that's where I'm going?
Well, I mean, I got to, you know, I've always messed around with a lot of putters because at one time I was not a very good putter. So I was trying to get something that was better so I would putt better and make more putts. And I mean, I just always had an interest in them. You know, I tried to play. I tried to play the tour and tried to do those things. And, you know, it, one thing just led to another. And I just got into the putters. Hmm. I just had an eye for it. I just, you know, started messing with them, grinding on them, and did that. And then, you know, had some ideas and just kept going with it. It just kind of happened.
Right. But when did you know that it was like, oh, my God, this is working for not only for me, but it's working for other people. I should keep going with this.
Oh, when I got the Hogan contract, when I got the idea. I mean, it was a matter of months when I got the idea until I had the contract.
Wow. That's amazing.
I mean, I had an idea. I had an idea, and I found somebody that would help me. There was a machinist, Rick Cooper, that, you know, basically the father of knowing how to set up and machine these things. He doesn't do them anymore. He does a lot of military and computer stuff now, but he helped me and got me started and, you know, and believed in my idea and did a lot of it. You know, the programming and getting the machines going and making the, you know, initial prototypes. I mean, in the beginning, it was not quite as easy as it is now. You know, we had to make more than one back then because we hadn't really done it before. We, you know, nobody'd ever done it.
Mm-hmm.
So we, you know, started from square one and developing on how to do this.
So after that contract with the Ben Hogan Company, tell me your history that leads you up to today and where you were working, who you were designing for.
Well, when I had the contract with the Ben Hogan Company, I had my company, and like any other small startup company, you know, I was doing it on my own, and I got a huge contract, and I did not have enough money to produce the putters that I had to make. So I had to bring some partners in and brought them in and got the deal going and everything like that. And I had to give away my shares, and I wasn't the majority stockholder anymore in this corporation. And I went into a meeting one day, and all of a sudden they voted me off as chairman of the board, and they fired me.
Oh, my gosh.
I was a little upset for a couple of days, and then I kind of thought, you know what? This whole company is me. You know, these are my ideas. I'm the one that set it up. Fine. And the next day, I got a call from Roger Cleveland, and he wanted me to come and produce putters for the Roger Cleveland Golf Company, which really, really got me going.
Mm.
You know, I couldn't. Roger was a fantastic person and helped me beyond belief in my early days starting to do this. Mm. So everything happened. You know, I believe everything happens for a reason, and these guys took my company, and they ended up, I think they filed bankruptcy about a year. They lost the Hogan contract. They couldn't, you know, they were my ideas. The whole company was me. So that's how I got going. And then I was doing the Cleveland putters and then doing my own putters, my handmaids and stuff like that. And it just went from there.
Kenny, let me take a moment here to say that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals, and features many audio versions of New York Times bestsellers. And Audible would like to have the Golf Smarter community try it out for free. Yeah, you get your first book for free. And then you, once you sign up for your account, you'll be hooked. That's all there is to it. And one book you may want to consider, talking about New York Times bestsellers, was something that was recommended to me by Jim Waldron. It's called Mission to Paris by Alan Furst, F-U-R-S-T, narrated by Daniel Jarrell. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And from the New York Times bestselling author Alan Furst and the modern day master of the genre, is what Newsday said, comes a gripping novel about espionage and deception in 1938 pre-war Paris. The book is it's just over 9 hours long. So it is a great first one to try when you sign up for your Audible account. And to do that, all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Kenny, now that you've gotten to this point where you are making and working with major companies and developing putters for them, who started using your putters? Who started taking notice of your putters that all of a sudden put you more on the map?
When I was with the Cleveland company, you know, we had a lot of guys using the Cleveland putters that I designed. It's the special ones. You know, as an example, Mark O'Meara won three. Crosby's using my putter was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You know, I made putters for Arnold Palmer. Greg Norman used my putter. If you won with it, Steve Pate. I made putters for basically almost everyone out there one time or another over the last 35 years.
Hmm. And now can we get them?
Can you get my putters?
Yeah, let's talk about your putters today and what it'll do for the average golfer.
Well, my putters, the Kenji and Indy putters, you know, that are sold on our website and at, you know, various outlets around the country are, you know, I mean, I think it's the, you know, I've developed the soft slot face technology where there's a slot that goes up inside of the top line, which basically transfers all the inertia to the heel and the toe. That's why the blade will stay square all the time.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I was looking online at your website and saw the video and stuff, and I noticed that slot. Explain to me what the advantage of that is and how it works.
Well, what it does is it goes up in that slot. You can't see it from the top because it doesn't come out the back in that cavity like anybody else that puts in a slot. It goes up inside of the top line, and it goes to within 25 thousandths of the top of the putter. So it's in the shape of a half moon inside of the face. And what that does is when it puts all the inertia to the heel and the toe, and that blade will stay square. You can take my putters and hold them in two fingers, put the ball on the dead end on the toe of the golf club, swing the putter back and strike it, and the blade will stay dead square.
Hmm.
It'll go where you aim. So that's how that works. Gives a little more feel.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer a center shafted versus a heel shafted putter, or does that not make a difference in your design?
I prefer, personally, myself, I use a heel shafted putter. I want the toe to release a little bit. I do not have a straight back to straight through putting stroke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a center shafted putter or face balance putter is better for someone that takes the club back straight and goes through straight.
Mm. That's good to know, because I prefer a center shafted.
Okay, and then I have those. I have both. but myself, I use the heel-shafted putter because I like the toe to release a little bit when it comes through there. I go more to the inside, back to square, and to the inside again.
If you don't mind, I would love to share a testimonial that's on your website. You can blush if you'd like. But this one came from someone in Bandon, Oregon, a guy named Ken. And it just, to me, it nails it of everything that I read here. It said, in the quest to improve my game and lower my handicap, I spent $450 on a new driver, then $200 on a new shaft for that driver, and picked up 8 to 10 yards. But my handicap remained the same. When I realized that I was averaging 37 putts around, I looked for a new putter. I'd heard about Kenny Giannini putters and bought one. It's so well balanced that it stopped me from hitting with my right hand. The putter does all the work. I've reduced my handicap by 5 shots. That's quite the testimonial. And that, it to me, makes more sense than anything in the world, because people spend so much on a driver. And really, what are you going to gain in strokes on getting a new driver every time?
Well, I mean, let's just take an example. You know, I think, I can't remember what the exact percentage is, but I think if you took all the golfers in the world, I think like 90% don't break 90.
Right.
It's a figure like that. I can't remember exactly.
I heard it was only 10% break 100.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was trying to be positive. But let's just take, for example, say your usual 85 shooter. A guy that shoots 85, 13 handicap.
You're talking to me.
They have no problem going out, as in the testimonial, they have no problem going out and spending $600 on the newest driver that they're only going to use 14 times in a round of golf.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all of a sudden, there you of the 85 shots, you have 71 shots left. Now, most people that are shooting 85, they're going to use their sand wedge a bunch of times. So let's say that, let's go to putts first. Say he's a great putter, a great 13 or 15 handicap. He's a great diameter putter. He's going to have 36 putts in a round of golf. Okay, that leaves 35 shots. Now, let's say on a sand wedge, he's going to use the sand wedge at least, let's say, 14 times in a round of golf because he's not hitting a lot of greens, anything like that. So that only leaves 21 shots left over. So you're going to go out and spend that $1,000 on that set of irons that you're going to use 21 times in a round of golf. Mm. You've got your sand wedge, you know, whatever you use that, you know, pay for that, you pay for it. Okay, now let's go back to the putter that you're going to use 36 times. Most people will go out and spend all that money on everything else, and then they'll go out and spend $10 on a putter. You know, the putter is a golf club that you can take five or six shots off your game.
Yep.
If you improve your putting. You're not going to do it with the driver. You're not going to do it with the irons. You know, you can take that many shots off your game with the putter. So that is basically the putter that's going to improve your game the most. It's the club you should spend the most money on.
It really is. It's amazing people. How many people will pick up. It's like, where'd you get that putter? Yeah, I picked up at a garage sale. You're kidding. Really?
Well, I remember before I was doing the putters and I was trying to play, then I went out and I bought, this is back in the late 70s, I bought a George Low Wizard 600 putter. You know, the one Nicholas putted with. I mean, I think they only made like 1,000 of them or 1,100. And I bought one and I paid $1,500 for it, which was a lot of money then. And I can remember my wife just went nuts. But again, I went out and won a lot of money the next week. And all of a sudden, then it was a great idea. But I did sell that putter for $3,500. So I made $2,000 on it. The putter is the club. You know, basically it comes down to your driver, your putter, and your sandwich. I mean, of those 85 shots that you're taking right there, you know, that's 64 shots with those three clubs. I mean, those are what you use the most, you should spend the most on. It should be what you think is the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has what looks good to them. And I hope that I make a product that looks better than anything else to everybody. That's what I strive to do. I want my putter to look the best. I want it to perform the best, and I want people to love it. You know, and it's just, I can't, you know, I can only control what I do. I can't control what anybody else does. And believe me, I get a lot of feedback from a lot of people that are tour players on every tour in the world and stuff like that. And like I told you before, I listen to everything everybody says. You know, I mean, I sent Mark O'Meara a putter. And he went out and putted with it, and I needed to make a few changes to it. You know, I had to do a cut custom. I'm making three putters for him right now. He'll have them next week that hopefully that will be in his bag when he comes back out next year.
You said something a moment ago that I really find interesting. I recently heard, I think it was Brad Faxon, who said, putting's all about confidence, right? You just have to be confident. And after I heard him say that, I went out the next round and I was like, okay, I'm totally confident about my putting today. I know that they're going to go in. And I putted much better. You made the comment a second ago about the look of the putter. How important is it to the golfer what the putter looks like when they're addressing it?
Oh, I think it's very important. You know, number one, the putter needs to set up square. Number two, they have to like what they're looking at. You know, I put putters down that don't look good to me. I mean, I don't want anything that I put on the ground that's going to take my eye away from the ball. I don't want to look at the putter. I don't want anything down there making me take my eyes and moving them to the right and look at the putter head. I don't want to design anything that takes away from the player looking at the golf ball. I want, you know, that's what I like down there. I want simple. I don't want it, you know, personally myself, I don't care for six red rings or golf balls or anything else down there. I don't want anything that makes my eye go away. I want to look at the ball. If I'm looking at the putter, I'm not going to make the putt. You know, I mean, I have things that distract me personally. As an example, on my irons, if I put a set of irons down on the ground, number one, they can't have a shaft label on it. My eye picks that up for some reason.
Wow.
And the other thing is, it's a trademark stencil at the bottom of the golf shaft on the last step. For some reason, my eye picks that up. So when I get a new set of irons, the first thing that happens is shaft bands come off, the acetone comes off, and I take the trademark off. Then it looks good to me down there. Otherwise, I see those things. I don't know why, but I know that it does it for me. And I don't want anything to put anything on my putter that's going to make somebody's eye, you know, make them look at this instead of trying to look at what they should be looking at, which is golf ball. Hopefully that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does, because, and it makes me think about all these different putters that keep entering the market that have the heads are painted green to supposedly, you know, blend into the grass, or there's a line in the middle of it, or there's big circles on the top of the, you know, to make it look like there's three balls in a row so you can see the line. There's all these different elements that are what I guess you would call distractions.
Exactly. You know, I have had people make comments about my putters that there's not enough engraving on. I mean, for some reason, people think that 25 cents or a dollar's worth of engraving more on a putter makes it worth more money to work better. It's important. Personally, myself, I don't, and I never will do it to my putters. I'm not saying that I haven't sold blingy putters. You know, I do my one-of custom putters, which are expensive. That if you call me up and you want to have all kinds of stamping all over and everything like that, fine, I'll do it. But that's not for the average golfer that's going out there. This is for somebody that maybe collects them or doesn't mind that kind of stuff. I don't know, for some reason, people think more engraving, it means it's better. Well, I'm completely the opposite. I believe less is more. I want simple. I want it classic looking, simple, and pretty down there. That's my opinion. And that's what I make.
I actually have come to be introduced to you by Tony Manzoni, who is one of my all-time favorite instructors to talk to down in the Palm Desert area, and also find to, in our conversation before, realize that you probably have known Tom Wishon for quite a long time growing up in the same area.
Well, I have, and Tom is actually the guy that got me really interested in doing kind of, you know, working on golf clubs. You know, I met Tom, you know, I met him when I was doing this, and we became, you know, great friends, and he taught me a lot. You know, Tom didn't teach me anything about putters, but he taught me about irons, reshafting irons, about grinds on wedges and reshafting woods and finishing and all that kind of stuff. He taught me a lot. You know, and I learned a lot from him, and I'm very thankful for it. We're good friends. And believe me, I wouldn't be here today if it hadn't been for him, you know, getting my interest in this about golf clubs. You know, instead of having somebody else do it, I could do it myself. Well, it just kind of kept going, and then it got into the putters. I kept getting putters when I was trying to play that didn't look right to me, and then I'd start changing them and trying to make them better. And I did my own.
Well, listen, we've come up to a time where I know that you've got to get going, and we're out of time on this show. I have so many more questions that I'd like to talk to you. Can we schedule another time to talk so we can do a part two of this conversation?
Yeah, we can go anywhere you want, anytime you want.
Oh, thank you.
No,
I appreciate it. So everybody should take a peek at KennyGiannini.com. Giannini is spelled G-I-A-N-N-I-N-I, and it's Kenny, K-E-N-N-Y, correct? KennyGianniniPutters.com.
That's right, Fred, and I really appreciate it, and I've enjoyed talking to you, and we can do this anytime that you'd like. I'd love to. I had a great time.
And up next, Kenny and I spend the entire episode discussing the various components that create a putter, and what you should be looking for when you make a purchase. And even though there's been a lot of emphasis on getting fitted for your clubs, this is the first discussion I've ever had about the importance of getting fitted for your next putter. Fascinating conversation. And if you're a tech geek, or if you're a club geek at all, you're just going to love this conversation. So make sure that you join Golf Smarter for members only and check out part two with Kenny Giannini. Back now in episode number 406, in the conversation with author Shane Ryan, we talked about his various frustrations on slow play and a little bit of his anger management issues. Well, I asked what you thought about it, and listener Warren Redmond sent in some great suggestions that basically request that anything OB, whether you find the ball or not, should be stroke and distance. So any unplayable ball may be dropped right back on the fairway, no closer to the hole, of course, but you don't have to go back to the tee box, and you take this penalty stroke. It's simple, it's easy, and it definitely picks up the pace of play. Great suggestion, Warren. I couldn't agree with you more. Just remember, though, agree to those rules before the round, and there won't be any conflict when it does happen. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button in the free Golf Smarter app for Apple or Android, or at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.